You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio. Soulmate. Today, our show is called The Delusion Solution. The Problem with Being Right. What if one of the secrets to a happy relationship is being just a little bit delusional? Today, we're exploring fascinating research suggesting that the happiest couples may not see their partners most accurately, they may see them more lovingly. We'll explore conflict, positive illusions, brain chemistry, and why being right might actually be hurting your relationship. So most people believe successful couples solve problems better. But what if that's not the whole story? What if they simply experience their partner, their conflicts, and their relationship through a different lens? Today we're exploring two fascinating areas of relationship research. Loving conflict, which looks at do couples see conflict positively, and if they do see it positively, does that impact and improve the relationship? As well as number two, positive illusions. Why couples who see their partners through rose-colored glasses often report happier, longer-lasting relationships. Together, these two things raise deeper questions. So let's go about the problem of being right, why conflict actually matters. So in this standpoint, I remember having dinner with a couple of friends of ours, and the one said that they're, you know, is it more important for you to be happy or more important for you to be right? And their answer was very odd, more important for me to be right. And I didn't get that. For them to be right made them feel like not vindicated, but they felt like, aha, I am right. So they would want to be in that conflict until they could prove that they were right. And therefore, they were choosing being right over being happy. And we'll look at that and go, does that make sense? We'll talk about when it does, and we'll talk about when it doesn't. So most people believe if we were truly compatible, we wouldn't fight. Well, couples are always going to have differing opinions on certain things. So conflict doesn't have to be a fight. It can be just a disagreement. It can be different opinions. And it depending on the level of the difference, it's going to give you different outcomes, meaning not different outcomes. It's going to be, is it a fight? Is it a conversation? Is it a discussion? Is it an argument? Where it is in a level of things. But the point is, how far do you let something get that's not important versus do you ignore things that are important that you should actually talk about? We'll be right back after this.
Once upon a time, there was a couple and a newborn baby. Or should I say, a single mum. This brave young lady left her 9-to-5 job to follow her passion and started a consulting business. Her friends helped out. She travelled the world, met new people, and again came home. The woman dated to find a man who would fill her life and fit her plan. She met a guy who checked out ladies. That burned her up. That made her crazy. Other guys were full of verve, into their self, no room for her. And one time she met a man with patch over eye and axe in hand. Then one day she had enough. Her little boy was all grown up, tired of attracting the wrong type of guy. It was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge and his ability to come up with amazing storylines, beautiful video edits, creativity of films unlike anyone else. Let's take a look at one of the books in his library. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and Jim Gulnick. Well, if it's good enough for Francis Ford Coppola, it's good enough for you.
So as we've been talking about, do you fight? It's the real question is, what does this conflict mean to you? So everyone's going to have an argument or a conflict. Do you feel like it's a threat? Is it a failure? Is it a sign of incompatibility? Or is it seen as an opportunity to understand each other better? Because two opinions in conflict with each other, thinking they're both right, maybe there is a better idea from your partner, or maybe you have the better idea. Maybe there's a third idea that when you discuss, quote, argue, have this conflict, you come to a third, better solution that neither of you would have had without having the conflict in the first place. So the question of conflict, how do you view it? Do you view it as a positive thing in your relationship? Oh, I can't wait to have conflict. I'm going to get to learn something new about my partner. I don't think any of us think that. But if we have a new perspective, and this is actually segment two, the Loving Conflict Study. There was a study done about how do you approach conflict? And depending on how do you approach it, does it change how conflict happens in your relationship? So the participants were 92 married adults between the ages of 22 and 35 years old. They were married less than 5 years, so there's still a little bit of freshness there, but they also had a good amount of time of getting to know each other. These are people from the United States, and it was a 4-month study. So this wasn't a long study like 5 years, 10 years, but it was over a 4-month period. What they did is they took one group, the study group, who continued to write a few times, the benefits of conflict. Conflict as a growth mechanism in their relationship. Conflict as commitment and conflict as understanding. This was something that they wrote a few times during this 4-month study. The control group simply wrote about what they learned regarding conflict, but nothing about the positive aspects about it, just how they felt about it. What researchers expected from this study was that the participants would view conflict more positively, experience better emotions during the conflict, use better conflict skills, have less severe arguments, as well as report greater relationship satisfaction. What actually happened is this intervention, this study, failed, that they did not get the results they expected. The writing exercise did not significantly change the conflict behaviors or relationship outcomes during those 4 months. But the researchers did find something very interesting that we're going to use in today's show. The people who already viewed conflict positively reported more supportive behaviors. They reported less severe conflict, and they reported better relationship quality. Now, objectively, did they actually have this? Although they reported all these beneficial outcomes of the conflict, an objective observer to the conflict would not see it. It's simply that these couples who had the positive view of conflict saw conflict as being positive, even though the behaviors and the outcomes were no different during the conflict, their feeling about it was different. So I asked the question of, if you feel that conflict is positive, that it gives you a better understanding of your partner, does that mean you have a better chance of for a longer, more satisfying relationship? That you may learn more about your partner, which may mean you may understand more, which long term may mean your conflicts change. So in a 4-month study, you don't have enough time to find these deeper answers to these questions. But as you want to learn more about your partner and you say, hey, conflict's good because I get an opportunity to do that, we're going to also talk about if acquiring skills that help you have better conflict and better discussions, if that's another thing. And we're going to talk about what came first, the chicken or the egg. What comes first? Viewing conflict as positive and then developing positive skills for having good conflict, or developing positive skills that help you have better conflict, better solutions, and then see conflict as being positive. So the big questions. Do these couples really handle conflict better? This becomes a central question in today's show. Do they simply experience the conflict differently, or do they actually handle it better, right? So this is what we're talking about. Imagine two couples, both leave an argument with the same disagreement unresolved. So two couples, one that view it positively and one that view it, quote, objectively. One says, we failed. We didn't come to a solution. We didn't solve our conflict. The other says, we understand each better. We may understand each other's viewpoints better. We don't agree, but now we understand each other better. They have a positive conclusion of the conflict, or they view it as being positive. So who had the successful argument? The answer depends entirely on how success is defined. So what does a successful argument look like? Most couples have never discussed this question when they're having an argument, or after the argument. Was that a successful argument? Do they talk about the argument? Was this a good thing for us to do? Was this a good thing for us to go through? Did we learn something from it? Does success mean we've solved the problem? We understand each other better. We're feeling that we're being heard. We're accepting the difference that we have with our partner. And we're preserving the connection. Are these successful arguments? Not that you've solved the argument, that could be one, but do we feel like we're heard? Are we accepting differences, or our partner accepting our differences, and we preserve the connection? So John Gottman's work, when we talked about this, I think last week, suggests that many recurring conflicts never disappear. The happiest couples often aren't any better at solving every problem. That 69% of relationship conflicts are perpetual, that the same things happen over and over, and we never get to the end of this conflict. So again, the happiest couples aren't always better at solving every problem. They're better at managing ongoing differences, understanding how to manage these differences. Maybe relationship success isn't, we fixed it. Maybe it's, we stayed connected while dealing with it.
Once upon a time, there was a couple and a newborn baby. Or should I say, a single mum. This brave young lady left her 9-to-5 job to follow her passion and started a consulting business. Her friends helped out. She traveled the world, met new people, and again came home. The woman dated to find a man who would fill her life and fit her plan. She met a guy who checked out ladies. That burned her up. That made her crazy. other guys were full of verve, into their self, no room for her. And one time she met a man with patch over eye and axe in hand. Then one day she had enough. Her little boy was all grown up, tired of attracting the wrong type of guy. It was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge and his ability to come up with amazing storylines, beautiful video edits, creativity of films unlike anyone else. Let's take a look at one of the books in his library. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and Jim Gulnick. Well, if it's good enough for Francis Ford Coppola, it's good enough for you.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. Illusion research, or positive illusion. Positive illusion in a relationship is where you talk about your partner and you think about your partner in very positive light, that you see them in rose-colored glasses. You paint them as being the most beautiful, gorgeous, wonderful person, the nicest person, kindest person, that they're resilient, that they're smart, that they're kind, that you really lift up all their positive aspects to a point where an objective outside observer would say, you're pushing it a bit, you're over-exaggerating. Well, it turns out that studies show that people who over-exaggerate the positive qualities of their partner tend to have longer term, more satisfying relationships with a closer connection to their partner. So by living in this positive illusion with your partner, it actually provides almost a circular reasoning of looking at your partner positively and talking about your partner positively. And then when someone says, how's your relationship? Well, it's wonderful because you believe it to be wonderful. The other thing, there are things that when you are positive in your outlook towards your partner, you then have this predisposition, this bias, the rose-colored glasses that have you see your relationship in a positive light. You see the positive things that your partner does while ignoring the things that aren't fitting to the way you see them. It's almost like when we focus on anything, we tend to see the things we're focusing on and not the things that are blurry in the background. Having a positive illusion about our partner, as long as it's not grossly misaligned with how they really are, if you're not being mistreated, that you're not being abused, if it is a relatively normal relationship, and you then are placing upon it these rose-colored glasses to look at your partner, then it can enhance your relationship. It can multiply the pleasure. It can multiply the satisfaction you have with your partner, and it can help you. And when you discuss your partner with other people, there are other benefits as well. When you're thinking so positively about your partner and you think how wonderful they are, other options don't start sneaking into your brain. When you focus on the bad qualities, when you focus on the problems, you're thinking, oh, maybe there's another solution. Maybe it's outside this relationship that's better. But when you think your relationship is great, it's fantastic, that this is wonderful, I get to discuss things, I get to learn more, I get to understand more about my partner, you're not seeking an alternative to that relationship. People who have these illusionary visions of their partner tend to magnify strengths. They minimize the weaknesses. They give benefit of the doubt to their partner, and they interpret the behavior of their partner generously. In many cases, their perceptions are not entirely accurate. So they report, though, at the end of this long-term, and this is a long-term study, greater satisfaction in relationship, greater commitment in the relationship, greater stability in the relationship, and longer lasting relationships. This seems backwards. Shouldn't accurate perception produce better outcomes? Apparently not. Having inaccurate, illusionary, positive vision of your partner is actually very healthy as long as it's a healthy relationship. Are rose-colored glasses creating love? Now let's connect the psychology to the neuroscience of what's going on here. We think about our partner in loving, appreciative, admiring ways, and our brain responds. It dumps dopamine into our body, or actually into our brain. It creates pleasure. It creates motivation, anticipation, and excitement to see their picture, to be with them, to talk about them, that you still have these feelings of being in love for the first time. Oxytocin, it helps build trust, bonding, security, and emotional safety with our partner. That will help increase connection. There are other things like norepinephrine. It sharpens focus and attention towards one partner. And I remember the study they did. They did the study with prairie dogs where they lowered the level of some of these chemicals in the prairie dogs, and the prairie dogs started cheating on their partners, where when they raised the levels, they stayed committed for long term with their partner in prairie dogs. So prairie dogs, humans, we're all, you know, on the same earth. Maybe there's some similarity in chemicals that we have in chemistry between all these animals. We have a release of endorphins when we think and talk about our partner in a positive light. We create comfort, stability, calmness, and long-term attachment. Thus, it raises a fascinating possibility. Maybe positive illusions aren't simply distorted thinking. Maybe they help create and maintain a biological state of being in love. So the story we reportedly tell ourselves about our partner may influence our own chemistry through which we experience that partner and help us build even stronger bonds with them as we continue moving forward to stay continuously in love and think about them in the most loving way.
Once upon a time, there was a couple and a newborn baby. Or should I say, a single mum. This brave young lady left her 9-to-5 job to follow her passion and started a consulting business. Her friends helped out. She travelled the world, met new people, and again came home. The woman dated to find a man who would fill her life and fit her plan. She met a guy who checked out ladies. That burned her up. That made her crazy. Other guys were full of verve, into their self, no room for her. And one time she met a man with patch over eye and axe in hand. Then one day she had enough. Her little boy was all grown up, tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge and his ability to come up with amazing storylines, beautiful video edits, creativity of films unlike anyone else. Let's take a look at one of the books in his library. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and James Gulmick, actually Jim Gulmick. Well, if it's good enough for Francis Ford Coppola, it's good enough for you.
We just talked about the positive illusionary effect of being in a relationship and how when we talk up the positive qualities of our partner, it can help create chemicals in our body that help us feel in love and be in love and see our partner even in more beneficial ways. So what comes first, the chicken or the egg? In this case, what comes first? The love chemicals that produce the positive perceptions, or positive perceptions that help create the love chemicals, or they both reinforce each other? Well, all early on in a relationship, we have all these love chemicals going on, which automatically in this lust stage and early attachment stages automatically have us start thinking about this potential partner as being wonderful, as we start ignoring some of the red flags. And that's probably one of the difficulties of early relationships, is that we don't see the red flags that we can see later on when some of these chemicals go away. Sometimes, though, we can create red flags by only focusing on the negative. However, here we go. So positive chemistry creates more positive experiences. If we get to a point in a relationship where we're like, this is really a decent relationship, the more we think positively about that relationship, the longer we can hold on to that love, that love feeling that we have, that attachment we have that we started with when we first met. But we can do it in both a realistic fashion as well as this illusionary fashion. That the realistic fashion is, this is a good relationship. The illusionary factor, or the illusionary piece to this, is not only is it a good relationship, but I love this relationship. I want to stay in this relationship, and I want to grow this relationship. I want to have goals with my partner. And these two things combined, a reality and an illusion that are positive and in the same direction, can help build that relationship. Now, it's got to be mutual. You can't be all rose-colored glasses with your partner and them always criticizing you. I mean, at some point, something's got to break. The cycle repeats, though. When you start talking positively and you're building these chemicals, you start seeing things that your partner's doing more positively. Especially you see the good things they're doing more so. And you can keep ignoring some of the small little non-consequential things that maybe you wouldn't like otherwise, that maybe annoy you and other people. But because you have such a loving insight, or like such a loving vision of your partner, you may ignore some of these non-important things that would bother you from a coworker. But then again, with a coworker, you don't have all the loving aspects of that relationship that you have with your partner. So this may explain why some couples seem to live in a positive emotional loop of vision of love and feeling of love and vision of love and feeling of love with their partner. And some may become trapped in a negative one, because when you start thinking negatively of your partner, you start nitpicking all these little things that become annoying. The things that you may have found so intriguing when you first met them are now, oh, this is terrible. This is awful. Oh, I can't believe they do that. That once you start getting into the negative illusion, you start building upon that, and that can drive you separate and apart. So you have to decide, is this relationship worth keeping? And is this relationship something that I can have a positive illusion about? And it's a, part of this is a decision. If you've ever thought of like positive thinking, when you think positively, it's kind of like, what is that thing called? Manifestation, right? If I think of all these positive things and I have my vision board, and I wanted to talk about this vision board, where you have these things down that you're looking for, and you have the business you want to be in, and you have my goal of getting this degree and my goal of going here on vacation. You have all these things. You are looking at things subconsciously and consciously that you will now recognize when they come in front of you as an opportunity. Whereas if you're not seeing anything because you're not thinking of anything positively, all stimulus, all evidence will appear equal. But when you are thinking positively, when you have a vision board, when you write down stuff in journal, when you are thinking that way, things that would be otherwise equal will start popping out at you, because these are things that you have listed as things you want to accomplish, things you want to be part of, people you want to meet, places you want to go, foods you want to eat, those type of things. So it's not only the places you want to go and the food you want to eat and the things you want to have in your life, where you want to live, what you want to do. It helps you feel positively as you're trying to attain these goals. So the journey, remember, the journey is the satisfaction. It's not the end. So by thinking positively along the journey that you're moving in this direction, moves you towards that end. I'm not even going to say faster, but happier. You're happier through that path. To continue on. So is a relationship that's positive, is it a reality? Is it a skill? Is it an interpretation? For instance, here are some things we can do. Let's say we want to have better conflict with our partner. We want to have better arguments or better discussions. So one thing, we can develop better skills. This is a way to do it. We can learn with our partner better listening skills, better emotional regulation. So what is that called? Emotional intelligence, right? We can validate. We can say, hey, I hear you. I hear you're feeling this way. You know what? I can understand what's going on. We can attempt to repair things with them. So these are skills we can learn. How to listen better, how to regulate our emotions better when we are having discussion with our partner, how to validate their feelings and to feel that our feelings are being validated, and then how to be better at repairing damage in our relationship. These are skills we can learn. So these better behaviors, these better skills, the better ways that we can do these things can build better outcomes. That's one way to do it. Learn skills, right? Next, number two, better beliefs. Hey, if we believe as a couple, as partners, that conflict can help us grow, that my partner has good intentions, and we can work through this and get through this together. This is a belief that this can help have better positive outcomes of the conflict, you know, as maybe we're developing skills. But even if it doesn't help the conflict initially, it helps your perception of the conflict. It may be like, hey, I know we're going to have conflict, but I know we're going to get through this together. You can then talk to someone, yeah, my wife and I, my spouse and I, my partner and I had this conflict, but you know, it's not a big deal because, hey, we're going to get through it. We're going to keep going together. That's positive. And then this positive aspect can influence your behavior. Finally, better meaning. The objective reality changes very little, but the interpretation changes dramatically. When we change our interpretation of what we're seeing, can change what the conflict means to us. With that different meaning, we can have a different emotional experience. The different emotional experience adds or takes away from our rose-colored glasses of the relationship. So again, by assessing conflict as, hey, this is good, this is what I learned from it, I got closer to my partner, I understand them more, they understand me better, I have validated their emotions, they validated mine and my beliefs and feelings, that now I'm closer to them, my rose-colored glasses are better able to focus on the positive aspects of the relationship and of my partner. Many couples aren't happier because life is easier for them, but they're happier because they interpret life differently. They interpret a challenge as something we go through together that builds us together as partners, that it keeps us tightly connected. We learn through conflict. We learn through the challenges that we have, that they view that life together differently than a couple who may be like, I've had it, and they reinforce each other's anger, and they reinforce each other's emotion of, this is terrible, and yeah, I know it's terrible, rather than, hey, we're going to get through this, we're going to get through it together, we're going to be stronger, we're going to be bonded more closely as we get through it. Again, as John Gottman says, connection is more important than conflict resolution, because we're always going to have the conflict.
Once upon a time, there was a couple and a newborn baby. Or should I say, a single mum. This brave young lady left her 9-to-5 job to follow her passion and started a consulting business. Her friends helped out. She traveled the world, met new people, and again came home. The woman dated to find a man who would fill her life and fit her plan. She met a guy who checked out ladies. That burned her up. That made her crazy. Other guys were full of verve, into their self, no room for her. And one time she met a man with patch over eye and axe in hand. Then one day she had enough. Her little boy was all grown up, tired of attracting the wrong type of guy. It was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge and his ability to come up with amazing storylines, beautiful video edits, creativity of films unlike anyone else. Let's take a look at one of the books in his library. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and Jim Gulnick. Well, if it's good enough for Francis Ford Coppola, it's good enough for you.
In the last segment, we talked about John Gottman and his connection theory, the theory that there's always going to be conflict and that there's a certain amount of conflicts that are never going to be resolved. So the most important thing in a relationship is the connection, that we're not talking about conflict as being the problem, that the attachment beneath, the need for attachment beneath the conflict, is sometimes the problem. Arguments about money, chores, intimacy, time, and communication. Hey, we don't have enough money. You spent money on this. You should have spent it here. How dare you spend that? You should have done this. You knew I was looking to do this. Chores. You didn't clean this. You didn't do that. You didn't pick up the kids on time. That these things are, quote, the conflicts that are discussed. Intimacy. You're not holding me. We're not spending enough time together in romantic dinners or spending time watching TV close together at night. That you're not spending time with me, that these things, we have conflicts about this. How much time do you want me to spend with you? Well, is it 2 hours enough? Isn't that enough? Communication, we don't talk anymore. The real need, though, is what John Gottman says, is safety. I want to feel that I can have an argument with you and you're still going to be there for me. Or no matter what happens, you are going to be there. I feel safe. Importance, that I'm important in your life. You're important in my life. Connection, that we can talk, we can discuss, and we can do this without having to raise the temperature so much that we can't resolve anything without getting into a brilliant fight. Trust. I can trust that whatever we say in this argument and during this discussion and during this conflict, maybe you will not share with your friends, that it's between us, that we have to trust that this is between us. And reassurance that you will be there. We've talked about that. You will be there for me. Reassurance that, hey, you can discuss these things with me. Hey, I want to hear what the challenge is, what the conflict is, so we can solve this together. Safety, importance, connection, trust, reassurance. Success isn't necessarily about solving the argument. Success is discovering what the argument is really about. What is the emotional need rather than what is the physical need? What makes me feel safe versus how much time, how much money? Those arguments. I want to feel safe. I want to feel safe. Here's the safe. I want to know that we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay in retirement. We're going to be able to make ends meet. We're going to be able to stay in our apartment. We're going to make our payment. That there's a safety aspect. And remember, I believe it was last week we talked about this. Safety is that we want to feel connected and part of it. Say we're in a community. We want to feel part of the community. That when you go back to survival instinct, is that if we're, quote, kicked out of a family, kicked out of a community, kicked out of a relationship, we can feel like that's the death of us. And what I mean by that is instinctually, when we lost connection with the tribe, we might have been kicked out of this small community. We no longer had protection from the tribe. So we still have these, innate survival mechanisms within us. So when we feel threatened, this could feel like our life is being threatened, and therefore we can react very poorly, and that can escalate, magnify, and create more hostile conversations than necessary, where if we felt protected during the conflict, we don't get into this survival mode. We don't feel like we're being threatened. We feel like we're communicating. We feel like we're connected rather than rejected. Here's the danger of positive thinking. Whew. I think we talked about talking about this. We need balance. We can't just be like everything is, what is it called? Sugar and roses, flowers and roses. I don't remember the chocolates and roses. Everything's just wonderful. No, everything's not wonderful. We need balance. Not every conflict should be reframed positively. Oh, you cheated with them. Oh, let's have a conflict. Oh, now what's the positive aspects of that? No, that's not what we're talking about. Not every relationship should continue. Again, not every relationship should continue. If there is abuse, if there's contempt, if there's chronic dishonesty, if there's repeated betrayal, and maybe addiction without accountability, these are things that should be it for the relationship. Now, I want to get into one specifically. I spoke to Lizette about this before the show, which is repeated betrayal. We always talk about this, is that neither of us could accept one betrayal. So this repeated betrayal thing, we have to talk about what is betrayal. Is that just meaning you said something poor about your partner, or does that mean you cheated on them? This is an aspect of sometimes psychology, therapy, counseling that is very, very tough to handle for some, is that sometimes relationships are worth saving and sometimes they're worth not saving. The question is, why do you go to a therapist? Why do you work on a relationship, or why do you work out of a relationship. You can work on it and in it, or you can work out of it. How do you work yourself out of a relationship? Sometimes that's the best reason to go to a therapist, is to discuss how best to break up. And sometimes couples counseling can be that avenue. If conflict is so bad, if there's abuse, contempt, chronic betrayal, if there's addiction without accountability, if there's just two people that just can't get along because the conflict's unresolved and will not resolve and there is not the connection, sometimes you have to get down to a human level and say, we need to talk about how to, as amicably as possible, end this so we can lower the hostility, lower the temperature, and both live our lives sanely. Positive interpretation can also become denial. Reality still matters in relationships. Healthy relationships require both optimism and honesty. And again, I don't want to move away too far from the positive illusionary studies, but they are based in, they're anchored in a bit of reality. They're not putting rose-colored glasses on a pile of mud and saying, oh, this is the best organic material ever for growing everything, and our relation's going to blossom out of this big pile of mud. And if you can imagine the mud as anything else, it's not that everything is positive. So there's got to be something there, like, hey, you know, it's already growing perfect flowers, but there's a couple of weeds. I'll just pick the weeds and I'll fertilize the flowers. And then I'll say, these are the most beautiful flowers ever. But a clump of mud without anything in it, you can't redefine as being the most wonderful landscape ever. And by the way, I'm talking about landscape because we've been having landscaping challenges this past week, and some areas don't want to grow anything. And you go, do I keep fighting this area and try to grow something in an area where nothing's growing? Or do I just put some very nice ground rock on top of it and say, that's it. I'm not going to try to grow anything anymore. I'm going to put some rock there and I'm going to move on. Sometimes our relationships are like that ground that can't grow anything. And if we've tried tending it, we've tried fertilizing it, we've tried planting seed, and nothing's happening, it might be time to move on. But that is the other aspect of trying to deal with conflict and relationships. Finally, our perspective on this whole thing. Perhaps conflict is not something to fear, avoid, or even necessarily solve. Again, you might not solve it, and you shouldn't avoid it. So that's the other one. Do you avoid a conflict or not? And we talked about this in CBT, in cognitive behavioral therapy, when we did a segment on that, is that you can avoid, you can approach conflict. If I approach conflict, now when I approach it, am I approaching it from I want to communicate with my partner in the conflict, or am I going to get into this heated argument? And if I'm going to avoid, am I avoiding it and the conflict gets worse as I avoid it, or it just settles down because it was not really important in the first place? So again, we're not to fear conflict, because you can have good come out of it. And even if you don't solve it, the good could be, I learned more about my partner, I understood more about their perspective, I'd learned how to communicate better with, and I've learned that sometimes we don't have to solve it, and we can both think we're right and agree to disagree. And sometimes it's really hard to say that, I agree to disagree. Hey, you know what? Not that I'm agreeing to disagree. I understand your perspective, and I have my own perspective, and let's just keep our own perspectives and move on to something else. And we have to learn how to communicate that. So conflict reveals, what does it reveal? What matters? What hurts us, right? What we fear, what we need in the relationship, and what differences may never disappear in this relationship. And when we know we have differences, are these the things to focus on? Or do we focus on the compatibility, where we have compatibility, where they are the most wonderful person, where the most reliable person, where they always are there for me, and together we'll face challenges, we'll face problems, we'll face conflict together, knowing that tomorrow we will be there to grow together. And when you have that commitment, when you feel that safety, when you feel that communication, you can get to that next level in the relationship where you can have a positive view, maybe an illusionary view of the relationship, but you know together you'll grow and you're going to solve it and get through it. Hopefully we've learned something today. We've had a fun time doing it, and we hope that you'll tune in next week on 90 Day Soulmate.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.